It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Me, Ernest Hancock, and we have on again, because we just didn't get all we needed out of Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. antiwar.com/radio, and we have Scott Horton on the other line. I got you there, Scott.
I'm here. Thanks for having me again, Ernie. Appreciate it.
Oh, we didn't get done. We didn't get near done. We want to talk about Iran. You know, it's one thing you helped me with. It just so happens I have Gareth Porter on this afternoon. She just wrote an article, Amiri told CIA Iran has no nuclear bomb program. And we're going to talk about that. And
what an important article. I interviewed him about it yesterday when it was just breaking. And by the way, Gareth Porter is the best. He's my very favorite. According to the counter and the web address there, I've now interviewed him 88 times, or was it 89?
Wow. Well, tell me about him.
Well, he's if I was Mr. White and I ran the Daily Planet, he'd be Clark Kent, and he'd be writing about exactly what I would have him write about. The latest false accusation about whatever's the most important part of whatever war is going on, he is on it. And he is just a war party lie debunking machine, and he's just the best. And the first time I interviewed him actually was in 2007, when George Bush was, you know, really talking pretty bad. He was announcing his surge, saying "forget you" to the establishment, the typical establishment, and going with the neocons on doubling down in Iraq, and made a really big speech threatening Iran and blaming them for everything that had gone wrong in Iraq. And I interviewed Gareth Porter, and he had written an article about this, and he explained to me that, well, you know, Condoleezza Rice had said some pretty mean stuff, some pretty threatening stuff on Fox News. But when she gave her briefing to the State Department reporters, it was pretty clear that any military conflict was quite a ways off now, and that that was more important to pay attention to. And he took all kinds of other things into account, and, of course, turned out to be right about that. And he's right about everything. All his work stands up the test of time, and he just debunks everything the War Party says, and he's great. And it's antiwar.com/Porter for every bit of it.
antiwar.com/Porter. Okay. So this is, we travel in the crowd. You know, the one thing that he's going to tell me that I really want to know about, and you can go ahead and prep us, is, is there a nuclear program?
Oh, man, well, not only is there no nuclear program, but the big story in the article that you mentioned, which, again, is at antiwar.com/Porter right now, and it's, it's the second one. There's clues suggest Amiri defection was an Iranian plant, and then there's the new one, sources Amiri told CIA Iran has no nuclear bomb program. Now, that's the headline, because the headline's got to be, you know, less than 100 words. The real story in here is that Gareth has a source who says that he has read the classified version of the new national intelligence estimate about Iran's nuclear program that is being prepared. And I'll get more in depth about what that is in a second, but basically it's the official stance of all of the American intelligence agencies coming together, combined in one big national intelligence council to decide what they say they think the truth is. And Gareth Porter's source, who says he's seen this the classified version of the new draft, says that unlike in the propaganda in the New York Times, the new NIE will not be backing down. on their previous conclusion from 2007 that there is, in fact, no nuclear weapons program in Iran and that they have not made the political decision to begin a nuclear weapons program. Now, that story from 2007 is something that the War Party has been trying to undo in every way they can, Ernie, and just pretend it never happened or pretend that, you know, somehow it was all politics and everybody knows that Iran is a nuclear threat. It just goes, it's a premise that goes without proving all over the place, and they've pushed hard to have this new NIE to try to revise that
NIE, National Intelligence Estimate.
Right. Okay. They're trying to push to have that revised to say that they are making nuclear bombs. And Gareth Porter is reporting that no, the new draft is going to stick by their previous conclusion that they are not making nuclear weapons. And after all, you know, I've been following this story very closely on my radio show, and particularly with the help of Gareth Porter over these years, and there's nothing that's changed. All there's been is a few forgeries and ridiculous stories leaked by the Israelis to the London Times, and there was a underground site where they still are going to begin to enrich uranium under IAESafeguards.com, and they pretended that that was a big secret and that Barack Obama pretended to out them for having it last October, when in fact they had declared it to the IAEA 4 days before. That was the only reason he brought it up at all. And basically there is nothing new that anybody's ever heard of that would say that somehow they actually have begun a nuclear weapons program in Iran. All that's changed really is that the War Party propaganda since the end of 07 has been able to triumph over facts and reason, and the echo chamber effect has taken hold. But if this new NIE comes out, it will be a major blow against the War Party, and I sure hope it's true that the CIA guys are going to stick by their guns on this one. Isn't that a funny thing to say out loud? But in this context, it's right, Ernie.
Okay, now let's make sure we get all these, you know, letter agencies out
I
there.
I know, I'm sorry, it's such a complicated
International
mess.
Atomic Energy Agency,
okay,
IAEA.
They're the UN's ATF. Okay, they're the gun control cops. They're here to make sure your weapons aren't full auto. In other words, so there's a nuclear non-proliferation treaty, which America is a part of and Iran is a part of. Now, the nuclear weapon states like America promised to one day get rid of their nukes, and they also, and they promised to not sell them to any or proliferate them to any non-nuclear weapon states. The non-nuclear weapon states who are members of the treaty promise not to acquire nuclear weapons by hook or by crook. And as part of that, if they have any nuclear program at all, they are mandated to have a safeguards agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency. And then they come in and do the verification, and they make sure, and I guess they come and inspect American facilities from time to time. They do this around the world with all states that are members of the non-proliferation treaty that have nuclear technology, and they come in and they do what's called the safeguarding operation, where they make sure that, okay, here's how much uranium you have, here's the quantity that you've enriched to this much percent, and then it, you know, got in a truck and it went over there and whatever, and they verify the non-diversion of nuclear material to any military or other special purpose. And this is where the rubber really meets the road, is in this complicated mess, because if you don't know anything about nuclear programs and you don't know anything about Iran, and people tell you nuclear Iran, be scared, and people with authority who are really smart, they're scared, they say it's something to worry about, then you tend to just go with that. But in fact, hey, the ATF is like hanging out at Koresh's house. They know his guns aren't full auto. They're sitting right there. There's no reason to raid them. Same kind of deal, you know? And in fact, of course, they say that the Iranians are crazy and they can't be dealt with and they're bad to their own people. And it is the Waco script all over again, basically. And in fact, in Waco, of course, they did have an ATF informant inside the house who knew that they weren't dangerous. But anyway, I'm going too far with my parallel there.
But the point is
that the cops are there, the international cops are there, verifying that none of Iran's nuclear material is diverted to any bomb project, and they continue to verify that non-diversion.
Okay, let me make this point and ask this question. To think that, I mean, I can hear Rumsfeld already. Well, you can't know, and we can't know, and you're not there, and you don't know, and we need to worry, and our concern will be demonstrated in a mushroom cloud, blah, 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 blah. So my question is this. Am I supposed to care that they have a nuclear weapon? Am I supposed to?
That's, stop right there. That's two important things. First of all, the Rumsfeld standard, you're absolutely right, is you must prove a negative. Well, in this case, I mean, what does this sentence sound like? The agency has continued to verify the non-diversion of nuclear material, verified the negative, verified that all the uranium is still sitting right there. It's not being diverted. So they have met the Rumsfeld standard, Ernie. That's the first thing. Secondly,
we get that second thing when we come back after the break. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. And we're getting a good prep for our next guest that's going to tell us all about nuclear Iran. Or not. Or should they be. Or shouldn't. I don't know. Should we have a point that we care about?
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
We grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud. I mean, at the height of the Cold War. I'm graduating high school in 1979, and I'm telling you, man, it was all about the Ruskies. You know, they're going to come. They're coming to get us. They're coming to get us. They're coming to get us. We got Ronnie Reagan in there. We're going to make sure you want to play. Let's play. And I remember having the feeling after the Russians went into Afghanistan, we got the movie Red Dawn out, which they're doing a remake, by the way. We got Iran hostages. We got the Middle East, Israel, gas lines, expensive fuel, same thing. I got a 65 Chevelle Super Sport with a 327 Rochester Quadrajet gas-guzzling automobile, and I'm paying attention, okay? I'm like, dang, my gas just went up double. I was paying attention. No jobs. The economy went to crap. Carter goes out. Inflation out the wazoo. The interest rate's at 23%. I mean, oh, my goodness, okay? What happens? Same thing's going on now. My kids are like, Dad, you don't understand. I go, you know, I get the same headlines. It's like a repeat. Heck, a lot of times it's the same freaking people. So I'm going, you know, I'm just, you know, we grew up in the shadow of this mushroom cloud. I so get it. It is just more brain screwing, you know? So I'm like, all right. So let's take a step back and let's ask the right questions. We have in Mr. Porter's article, he's talking about this guy that was always part of the weapons program and what the CIA got out of him and wanted to get out of him. And when I come to find out, he's just a radiation specialist. He's like, you know, waving guys, making sure they're not glowing in the dark as they're going. So he's not really inside the, you know, making the actual core and, you know, rubbing his hands together going, whoa. So he's a good asset for CIA to be able to say we got our own little special, you know, curveball, deep throat, whatever the heck. Okay, they're just making it up. Now, the thing is, this is a standard operating procedure. Finally, he's like, you know, I think I defected. I don't want to be here anymore. You guys are all screwed up like polio, and I'm going to go back to Iran. Well, of course, then they try and burn him and make him, oh, yeah, he told us, and so Iran's not going to like him. So it's just back and forth, ouch, quit it. And it just clouds up the one main point that I keep making over and over, and nobody wants to talk about, except maybe Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. And I'm asking this one, Scott, Iran, they're not allowed to have a deterrent, a nuclear deterrent? I mean, is there some, they signed a treaty? I mean, can they get out of the treaty? Can they, because they were making, they had a program up until 2003. So the fact that they even had that, they're all freaking out. Well, you had it. Well, if you had it before, you had it again. You moved it in trucks and it went to Syria, you know, wherever the heck they say it. So I am like, you know, I got to ask this question, whether they do or not. That is not even the point with me. My point is this. Do they have a right as a nation, as individual people? Heck, I'd say the individual 23-year-old in Tehran could have his own nuclear device. I mean, you know, I don't care. I want mine. If my government has it, where'd they get the authority for that? How did they get the authority to have nuclear weapons? Where did it come from? If it didn't come from me, then where did they get it? And if they say I can't have it, then who's in charge of who? And who delegated authority to the central government in Washington, D.C. to have a nuclear deterrent anyway? If it didn't come from me, where'd it come from? So I'm just, this whole point about being able to defend yourself against an obvious aggressor in the area, I need that question answered first. That's why you're back today. That question, I want an answer.
All right, well, there's a few things to unpack there. I mean, on one hand, first of all, the legality. Right now, under international law, it would be illegal if, for example, the Iranians had a secret nuclear weapons program that nobody ever heard of, they only had made up and implied or something, because they are, as you said, members of a treaty that they voluntarily signed. And according to the treaty, this is a confederation, not a real federation. If you get my meaning there, the difference between the United Nations and, say, the D.C. central government that we have kind of thing, they have the right to withdraw from that treaty. They have to announce within 6 months in advance that they're going to do so. And, yes, the question of where – let's put off the question of where states get their legitimacy
Okay, let's finish on that, though.
No.
I get to ask questions, Scott. That's the way it works. My show, your show, you get to ask your questions, okay? So my question is this. I mean, because you're a rambler, man. So my question is this. If they went and said, you know what, I've given you a 6 months notice. Now, of course, you know that here come the tanks and the space-based weapon kind of whatever, but that's not the point. If they go, all right, we had this agreement. You know what? We're breaking. I break with thee. I throw dog poop on your shoes, okay? Mm-hmm. I am going out of this. Is there any other reason or justification the planet or anybody else would have for them becoming a nuclear power and having their own deterrent? I mean, where is the moral argument they would make? Yeah, we don't want you because you got brown skins and wear turbans. I mean, what is their justification for it? France can, they can't.
Well, they don't have a justification for it. I mean, the reason for it is that the Israeli government is paranoid about what might happen if they lose their local nuclear monopoly, which really they share with the American Navy in the region there. And that's the basis for it. And then any UN Security Council resolutions demanding that they cease enrichment are simply, even if you accept the UN system as it is, are completely illegitimate. The UN Security Council has no right whatsoever to dictate an end to the civilian program. And on the moral level, if you accept the existence of nation states, then Iran has every prerogative, the same right as the United States of America or any other nuclear weapons state to gain nuclear weapons. After all, I mean, they're not really offensive weapons. They're deterrent weapons. So far, they have been since the monopoly that America had was lost. So, I'm against nuclear weapons for libertarian reasons, even for states to defend themselves with them. I don't think it's fair to have weapons that can only be used indiscriminately and will be guaranteed to kill civilians, which is true unless you're hitting silos way out in the middle of nowhere, I guess, with them. So on that level, I'm against them. But if you accept the idea that, hey, there's nation states in the world and they get their power from wherever they claim they get it from, Iran has every right to nuclear weapons that Israel has, India, Pakistan, America, France, China, Russia, et cetera.
Okay.
Of course.
So my thing is that we're, if you were to make the argument that we want to do away with guns, guns are bad, gun control, fine. Take away the police and militaries first. All right. I mean, if you're
absolutely,
so you're not going to have. If you say we're not going to have nuclear weapon, fine. Take away the military and U.S. first. My thing is if you're going to give a state, you put the state above the individual. That's the only way you can justify that they have something that as individuals we can't. Where did they get the rationalization that they are justified or have the authority or the sanction to have that? It has to come from the people or the people, you know, delegated that somehow, a right that they have, or to share it with them or something, or we are just slaves. It's that simple. So I can't, everybody wants to argue all this other stuff, and I'm going, until you can get that concept down, you're just wasting my time. Because that is one thing I want made perfectly clear. You cannot have a state that you can say cannot have nuclear weapons, and then you have them, and then you got to go, and who's are these countries that saying they can have them? Where'd they get that sanction from? Who made them God? Okay, well, it's supposed to be, certainly in America, from the people. Then, of course, we had to have the ability to do it. So that's where it gets the principle. I want to get that out and said, so now we can go to where, okay, so we got this organization that we made a deal with. We're going to have the IAEA as part of the United Nations, and they say, we're going to have a deal. You're going to sign a deal. It's going to be a slanted deal. We're going to enforce deals. Deal. So we got the deal. We got this deal. All right, fine. Yeah, 6 months ago, I warned you a deal. Going to break the deal. You want to do that? Fine. But now we have a situation to where we have people that, with inspection, are in compliance with the deal. We want to break the deal. Why? What is behind this? We'll get to that in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
No, the man be a coming around. And this is my question to Scott. We got built up to this, so everybody got to say what they want to say. This is my question. Who's the man? Where's the man? Who's really the man? Who's behind all this?
Benjamin Netanyahu is the easiest way to say it. The Prime Minister of Israel, the leader of the Likud party. This is their policy. There's no mistaking it. The neoconservative movement, which is incredibly closely tied, you know, on an individual level, with the Likud party, represents their interests in America, along with really the rest of the Israel lobby, but led by the neoconservatives. And they're a bunch of paranoids, and they're a bunch of right-wing nationalists, and they want to have a nuclear monopoly in the Middle East for Israel for forever. And American power is a lot stronger than Israeli power, so their interest is to get America to make it our fight. They had a major part in lying us into war in Iraq and pushing for war with Iraq. Ariel Sharon's office, even manufactured intelligence in English to stovepipe right into the Oval Office by way of the Vice President's office and the Pentagon, as reported in The Guardian and The Nation. And this time, there's just no mistaking it at all, because there are so few of the other factions on board that were on board for the Iraq war who, are nowhere to be found on this. Really, mostly they're just silent. And there's basically nobody but the obvious, no bones about it, Israel first or neoconservative and Israel lobby movement in America. They want war with Iran. They want crippling sanctions. And then they want to be able to tell you, Ernie, that the sanctions just aren't working. You know, David Koresh, no matter how much we try to reason with him, he just won't come out because he's crazy. That's what they're pushing here, is these people cannot be dealt with. There's only one way to deal with them, military, which would mean, you know, a couple of few thousand airstrikes across their country against their nuclear program, their military establishment in general.
Okay, let me go ahead and share a little secret that's going on now that you will probably understand the power of this. There is a group called We Hold These Truths, so WHTT.org or something. They have been, his name is Chuck Carlson, and his whole thing during this entire war, I remember first interviewing him back in 2003 when he was going to all the churches and protesting, saying, how can you be pro-life while you're doing this shock and awe, laying waste to all these innocent human beings that had nothing to do with anything? And so he'd go on and on and on and on and on. And there was an undertone that, you know, a message that he wanted to get out. And it's all about, you know, the Israeli interest for over a century has been, there was a thing called the Schofield Bible or Schofield or Schofield, something like that. That was a reference Bible. They gave to the seminaries. They trained all these pastors and so on that kind of linked the Old Testament to the New Testament and said it's all about the rebirth of Israel. And it gets to this Christian Zionism thing to where you have, if you want to go to heaven and if you love Jesus, you're going to support Israel. Okay, that this was a concentrated effort. They actually did it, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is this. Over the 4409, one of the videographers that does a lot of movies and so on for Freedom's Phoenix, he was hired by this group to edit and produce a movie that's 33 minutes long. I just saw it this weekend. And it's just a 33-minute movie that has this impact. They interview one of the popular pastors here. And, of course, yes, fulfillment of prophecy, Israel, blah, blah, blah. What happens, you watch this in just 33 minutes, they, you know, whether, I have no reason to believe any of the information is not accurate there. I think it's pretty well documented. But the bottom line is this. I see where this is going. What's going to happen? They start mass producing this movie. Oh, we got the jackets done. It's ready to go out. It's going to be huge, big, giant Uber thing. And it does one thing. It demonstrates how Israeli interest has for a long time used the Jesus-based Christian New Testament church in such a way to intertwine them into Israelis' interests as if they were the same thing. And if you're, as a nation, for the first time, we are not going to be judged for the sins as an individual, but we are going to be judged as the sins of a nation that does not support Israel. This is the dogma. This is the mantra. This is the fist pounding on the table from the pulpit. As it, and you get guys like Hagley or whatever his name is screaming that we need to start thinking about a preemptive strike on Iran. Okay? When this whole thing starts, just even the question, the issue, the background, where this came from, who started this, how it's been propagated with the neocons, coming from Israel, funding up, blah, 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 blah. When this comes out, even as a question, even as an issue to be discussed, I am going, look, guys, you guys understand the power and force of the center, inner sanctum of, oh, my goodness, is going to come crashing down on you guys when you start challenging this support of Zionism from the Christian church. And how does that get propagated? Well, we have, you know, faith-based initiative stuff from the Bush administration. We get the neocons get, and part of that is they get the database of all the churches of their membership. That's what thing I was screaming about. I go, what do you think part of the deal of this is? You think you're not going to get a little postcard from the Republican Party? What, are you on crack? Then you have, here comes Obama, and what does he do? Oh, we're not going to get rid of it. We're going to embrace it and expand it and do whatever. For whom? I'm just going, so I can see the power, whether you believe it or not, it's not even the point. The point is the very fact that you have people that have this point that they're making, that the Christian church in America has been taken over by a combination of the government, you know, through all this faith-based initiative, through this 501c3 kind of we control, you can't say whatever, through the seminaries that have a Bible that has been had added stuff to it and this description of and footnotes and all this to support the state of Israel. And this is just to even bring up the third rail Israel in such a way, I see what's going to happen. They have to react. And I don't think these guys are prepared for it. Maybe they are. You know, they got a wide, you know, group around the world and country and whatever, but they're talking about getting it translated and given to mosques and translate it into Arabic. I see this one 33-minute film and what it is going to spawn as being a big, giant threat for just the reasons that you pointed out.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you, Ernie, I think that the power of the Hagiite fundamentalist Christian right is it's a really interesting thing to tie with the Israel lobby. You know, you got to figure, I think it's just an established fact, right, that like 80-something percent of American Jews are liberals. They vote Democrat, and, you know, they believe in basic liberal values pretty much across the board. And yet they have this alliance with the Gary Bowers and the Pat Buchanans, the Pat Robertsons and Jerry Falwells and so forth of the world. And And those people are against every other thing that they're for, other than their alliance on issues of what's good for Israel. And as it's so worth pointing out, Ernie and Stephen Walt pointed it out on my show today, that what the Israel lobby and especially the neoconservative movement, as supported by the Christian right that you're talking about, think is good for Israel is not good for Israel at all. It's completely and totally self-destructive for Israel, and every reasonable person ought to be able to see that they need to make peace with their neighbors, they need to give up the occupations, and let the people of Palestine get up from the boot on their neck and look forward to a long and prosperous future with their friends.
I mean, what do you know about that?
The good future of Israel, not what Benjamin Netanyahu, and certainly not what Bill Kristol want, another major war in the Middle East. How is that going to be useful for the long-term survival of this tiny little state over there, you know?
What's the people's view from people? I've known a lot of people from Israel. In fact, the state chairman of the Libertarian Party here is an attorney and a big computer geek, and, we have our servers for Freedom's Phoenix on it and all that. He's Jewish. His mother was part of the battle back in the 40s. He had pictures of her with a machine gun. I mean, he goes back to Israel every summer. I mean, he's visiting and so on back and forth, that's kind of, and of course he knows what's what, so he's not philosophically in, but I tell you what, what's the view of the Israeli people that are there? Any of them? I mean, what's the opposition to Netanyahu? I mean, are there people? Heck, I got, Orthodox Jews in New York screaming about the fact that Israel even exists. They're not in support of that. Where is the dividing line? Who is the other side in opposition to Netanyahu in Israel?
Well, it's very complicated, and I'm not from there, and I don't know nothing about it, really, other than... I think it'd be, I hate to even say it, but I think it's more or less true that it's sort of a left-right divide. You have secular right-wing nationalists in alliance with religious right-wing nationalists, and you have labor-type people, progressives and leftists in alliance with liberal democratic types and so forth, and the moderate center, so-called, dominates, and that's the war party, just like here.
Well, when we come back, we're going to get some more goody from Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. This is what he focuses on every day. We'll be right back with Scott Horton here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy. You're rushing headlong, out of control, and you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping, and you can't stop rocking, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Sure, there's something we can do about it. We can't complain right up until we can't, and that's one thing that I want to find out. I want to find out when we're not allowed to complain anymore. Yeah, because that's a comment. Because I remember there was a speech we had at Freedom Summit one year by Vince Soprano. It's freedomsummit.com. Next one is the first weekend in December. Lots of good guys. And Vince Soprano had said, he goes, when we look back to the good old days when we used to be able to complain about what's happening, and that has always been a stage. And now they're starting last week. They shut down 79,000 WordPress pages. They call a bunch of Facebook pages that have anything to do with kind of, freedom or Gadsden flag or don't tread on me or something like that. Boom, done. This is already happening. So I don't know. Can we complain, Scott? I mean, are we allowed?
Well, I hate to say this, but, it is kind of a negative thing. But, Ernie, I think the degree to which you and I are free to say what we want is a bit of a measure of how useless it is and how unimportant it is to the people that we're trying to oppose here.
I agree with that.
I don't want to sound like that, but that is kind of, honestly, it's the way I see it with a shrug.
I don't think they respect the power of dissent. I don't think they really see us coming. I don't think they're only worried about the militia guys or using them as an example or they got a gun. Because if you only think in terms of force. That's the only thing that you see. You know, they don't see a bunch of hippies going around putting daisies in gun barrels as a threat right up until all of a sudden everybody's a threat, you know. So it's I like the fact that they don't understand. But there are people that do. There are people that, you know, and they're more not in government. They're more private. They're more, they take you out beforehand. That's why I see this attack on this Christian Zionism kind of thing, that somehow we got pulled into this support of it. It got twisted into where this Judeo-Christian kind of, even the terminology, just the manufacturing of that word is, you know, part of the marketing campaign for us to be in, you know, do or die support of the interest of Israel. It's like, it's not even like we're supporting Israel. It's like they're our brain or something. It's like they're controlling us. So what is the future in the Middle East with that kind of support from this big Goliath that we have? And what happens when our military industrial complex bankrupts us and puts it into where we can't even pay our soldiers? I mean, there's going to be an end to this. And once we are out of it, it's like Ron Paul says, he goes, we are coming home. I mean, one way or another, they may be hitchhiking back, but sooner or later we're done. And when that happens, what happens to the Middle East? And more importantly, I mean, if not important, but certainly something to look at, what happens to Israel when they don't have their bulldog on their chain by their side anymore?
Well, you know, I think it greatly depends on what men choose to do between now and then. I mean, frankly, if you take the role of, which, you know, hey, they're human beings, so any humanitarian ought to say, hey, best of luck to the people there. You want the best for the people there. It's not doing what Benjamin Netanyahu wants, which is, ultimately, create a majority Palestinian Arab, Muslim and Christian Arab state ruled by a minority Jewish faction that, you know, at least half of them or more are European immigrants. You know, you talk about before we talked about the secular right wing faction there, Likud, and then to the right of them is Yisrael Betinu. That means Israel, our home. But they're all Russians. It's a Russian party, and their leader is a really right-wing fascist guy. Even according to the New Republic, he's a fascist named Avigdor Lieberman, who has, in the past advocated bombing the Aswan Dam and drowning Cairo, and proposes loyalty oaths for all the non-Jews that are, Arab citizens of Israel, and massive deportations. And, you know, I mean, they're getting pretty crazy over there, and it's not in the interest of Israel. I think, you know, if Rabin hadn't been assassinated and things had continued to go his way, they could be on the path toward, something like a real long-term peace and friendship with their neighbors. There's no good reason why not. Nobody wants to live out a grudge forever. People say this fight's been going on for centuries and thousands of years. Nuh-uh. It's been going on since 1948, and it can be resolved. And people just have to want it, that's all. And, well, I should add here, it's just like the question of, can Iran have nukes? I just don't want America intervening anymore over there. This is mostly our fault, and we pay the price for it.
And we should just stop.
We should just stop.
Stop, 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 stop. You want to know how this gets all amped up and everything, and the media and the Fox News and whatever? You just look at the border with Mexico. You want to see immigration, 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 immigration. We had a millionaire spent $3 million of his own money to get in to the gubernatorial race here for Republicans just to bring up the issue of economics and role of government. I mean, lots of money. Spent it, done, and he goes, I'm dropping out. You can't get past this immigration thing. You know, that's all they'll talk about. It's all the media wants to do. They're pushing this. Where's this coming from? Why is it immigrate? Seriously? This is all the issue is. This is all they're going to talk about.
Scapegoating the weak, Ernie, because they know that we know it's their fault. We know that the problem is on Wall Street and in Washington, D.C., inside that beltway. The whole society knows it. And so they're desperately saying, look, the poor and the brown and the weak. And boy, we better not fall for that. Calling all anti-demagogues. It's the people with the power that are the enemies of us all.
Yeah, no, it's always, like you say, it's the poor, it's the minority, it's the gay, it's the outcast, it's the gypsy, it's the Jew, it's whoever it is that they want to come up with and say they're the scapegoat for whatever, and it always comes down to, you know, often the time, the people at the top may have been part of one of the groups that they were persecuting. It was just an excuse. It was just a mechanism to consolidate more power, to have an excuse to do whatever the heck it was that they want. And I want to ask you, what do they want? What would make Israel happy? I go, all right, here, you get whatever you want. Here it is. What is it? What would satisfy them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's no such thing as Israel, really, of course. I mean, what does the Likud party want? I think ultimately they want what they call greater Israel, which at this point means to eventually, in slow motion, expel all of the Palestinian Muslims and Christians from the West Bank and from the Gaza Strip into Jordan, across the Jordan River, into the east side of the Jordan River there, and down into Egypt, and they want to just control that land. And they're making slow motion progress toward that every day with your dimes.
Well, if I went to every single Arab that lived inside and go, what do you want? This is it. This is what you want. You got it. You're done. This is it. For sure. You're done. This is it. Here's the line right here. Build a 30-foot wall, 100-foot wall. You're done. This is all it is. All it takes. Really? And we go, fine. I give every single one of the people in here $1 million for them to move and go be across the river in Jordan, Canada. We're going to give you what you want, give them the money, done. It'd be cheaper than what we're doing now.
Yeah, I don't think that they'd take the money. And I don't think that it would ever be offered that way. But, you know, it's important to say here, I think, that if the Israelis would withdraw their so-called settlers, the colonists, the trespassers, on the West Bank back into Israel, and they would abide by 67 borders, 1967 borders, get back behind the so-called Green Line and give up the West Bank and Gaza and let it be a Palestinian state, even Hamas, never mind the Palestinian Authority that is, might as well be created by American Israel anyway, but the actual Hamas in Gaza has said repeatedly, including on the Charlie Rose Show on PBS and all over the place, that they are willing to recognize Israel. They're not pushing to go back before 1945 or back before 1920. They want to go back. They want the line to go back to 1967. And that's what the Saudi Arabians say is fine with them. And that's what the Syrians say is fine with them. And that's what the Egyptians say is fine with them. And that's what Jordan says is fine with them. And it's fine with everybody except the Israelis, that they just cease the occupation. And if you say, come on, stop the occupation, they say, you want to destroy Israel. No, it's just the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza within the 67 borders. Everybody is okay with that. They're willing to accept that. They're not happy about it. They're refugees from their own homes, after all. That's why the right of return is a controversy, because people were expelled from their homes. But ultimately, they're willing to settle.
This is my point, Scott. Even if they got the Gaza, the Golan Heights, the West Bank, they get if Israel got exactly what they wanted, do you really think that would stop it? Are they satisfied? Is that it? I mean, is there world domination? They still want their paycheck from the United States Congress. I can guarantee you that. You know, they still want the U.S. military to do whatever threat they perceive to have. They're still going to. I don't see an end to this. And what power of the people do they have in Israel? They're saying, look, you know, you got to imagine that the young are starting, especially with the internet and translating software and the ability to interact with people on. Just, you know, any kind of Facebook or whatever.
There is a lot of dissent in Israel, more than there is about it here.
I would think so. I mean, you know, I don't see, if I knew what it was that they wanted, you could start to go, but it doesn't seem like there is. It's not what they can get. It's just this influence, this power, this money machine that they have that goes to the rich guys in poor countries. I mean, from poor people in rich countries. I don't see an end to this, and they are going to have to, I don't know. We're going to talk about it more in the next hour when we have Gareth Porter, you know, which we get a big endorsement from Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. Hey, thanks a lot, Scott, man. I appreciate you coming back on.
Thanks, Ernie. Appreciate it.
We'll be right back with Gareth Porter in just a little bit.